So we're going to finish out talking about COVID just very briefly. I should mention, as I was saying before, we're going to be sending out notification about four more webinars. We're going to do sort of what we call breakout sessions to further discuss these topics. These will be hour-long webinars, one person from the faculty tonight and one from the PARP faculty on Monday. We'll work together as for one and sort of take these things to the next level. Or a bunch of new strategies we're going to talk about. HER2 positive endometrial cancer, really exciting stuff that was presented. We're going to get into some of those things, more cases and more discussions in these follow-ups. But I wanted to maybe just sort of get a little bit of a taste. And again, I think we can follow this up more in these other sessions about what's going on right now. Obviously, it's very much dependent upon where you are in the country. But we asked the faculty of 25 people, do you think that people on PD-1 antibodies are more susceptible to getting COVID? And people either think no or they're not sure. And of course, nobody really knows the answer, I think, to that. We asked people, you know, and again, I don't know how much data there is at this point. We're starting to see some data, whether or not people on anti-PD-1 antibodies are more likely to develop or less likely to develop complications. And there are docs here who, some of the docs, a minority, think that maybe they might be more likely to develop complications. Krish, any thoughts about these two questions, whether or not being on an anti, we'll see what the SGO says, but what are your thoughts in terms of whether or not being on an anti-PD-1 antibody either changes the risk of getting COVID or complications from COVID?
Yeah, I haven't seen, I've had patients on anti-PD-1 for, several years now, and I really haven't seen, a significant diminution of their immune function. And so I am kind of on the fence, but leaning towards, I do not think it increases the risk of contracting COVID-19. With respect to, worsening complications, if you are COVID-19 positive getting immunotherapy, I think possibly that is a significant risk, especially if they're having some of the other autoimmune type of effects associated with PD-1 therapy, anti-PD-1 therapy.
And Ursula, you actually had a case, we didn't get to it, of a patient who was COVID positive. But this paper that I was just talking about just came out. It's available online at this point and goes through a lot of interesting things. But I just wanted to summarize a couple things that it said about, specifically about immunotherapy. Well, in the introduction, I thought this is a very interesting statement. Regardless of geographic location, COVID-19 will impact all practitioners. However, the degree will be based on COVID burden and available local resources. And as I talk to people around the country, I was talking to Katie Moore, Oklahoma is a very different situation than New York, et cetera. So I think that is important to qualify. But Ursula, one of the things they bring up is the challenge of diagnosing, at least in patients on checkpoint inhibitors, immunotherapy-related pneumonitis versus COVID. I've heard people say the imaging looks kind of similar. Not all COVID patients have fevers. Any comments, Ursula, about this specific issue?
Absolutely. And one of my cases was a patient who's on pembrolizumab. And she, I was getting basically, kind of routine follow-up CTs just to make sure she's having a response. Radiologist calls me and says, you know what? This looks like COVID to me, kind of bilateral, just, reticular infiltrates. And sure enough, I call the patient immediately and she says, oh yeah, I've been short of breath for the past week. So, went back and forth in my mind how we're going to manage this. And obviously can't assume that it's a, IO-induced pneumonitis. Have to assume it's potentially COVID. So at a broader in the hospital, COVID test times three, all negative. She was discharged from the hospital on oxygen and not getting better a few days later, sent it to pulmonology and said, I do think now this is probably pembro-induced pneumonitis. She started on steroids and rapidly improved. So yeah, I agree. You have to really think about both issues and other things as well, because patients are on other medications. They can have that kind of bilateral reticular infiltrates without a fever. It could be so many different things.
And Krish, also this statement talks about lengthening intervals between treatment. They come right out and, you know, talk about, you know, recommending using Q6 pembrolizumab, but also Q4 nivolumab and Q4 atezolizumab. Krish, is that something you're moving towards with these agents?
Definitely.
We talked about pembro before.
Yeah. I don't use Nevo. I don't have an indication for it for the cancers I take care of. And same with atezolizumab. I could talk to my medical oncology colleagues that were using it for bladder previously, but even with the bladder disease, the atezo indications have dried up when the phase 3 trial failed to perform. So I don't have any experience with Nevo or atezo.